This episode is brought to you by CEP Compression Australia. CEP Compression brings the user more energy, greater endurance, and enhanced performance during activities. For a discount at CEP, use the following code online, local legends in running. Welcome to the Local Legends in Running podcast, where you hear the stories from local legends in the Australian running community you've simply always wanted to hear. Today in episode 11, season 3, I chat with Brisbane local, friend, fellow teacher, and neighbour, Drew Williams. Already a previous guest on the show, Drew is an amazing runner and person. As a recent 30, 50, 10K runner guy, Drew has serious speed to burn, not to mention his ability over the other distance events. With his second appearance on the show, Drew came on with a specific focus, wanting to share his experiences and knowledge on the topics of improving running as you age and longevity, cross-training, and mental health surrounding injuries with running. I hope you enjoy. Sweet. Well, welcome, Drew Williams, to the Local Legends in Running podcast, the first podcast in person for me. So it's awesome to have you here, but probably a couple of reasons we can do that. You live pretty close by.
That's it.
Down the road in Nudgee, both of us. But yeah, fellow colleague, fellow teaching-wise, that is, fellow mate. And obviously, we run a bit together. And your second time on here on the podcast as well. So it's good to be back.
It is.
Now, you got a bit of a purpose, bit of an intent to the conversation, because last time, it would have been almost 2 years ago that you came on here. From memory, it was about like episode 5 to 8-ish or something, where I had a handful of guests on here, but wanted to sort of get a hold of someone a little bit faster too out there in the men's, that is, and got a hold of, I think it was Chris Littlejohn, a mutual mate of ours, now still running, lives on the Gold Coast, but he connected me to you to talk about all things running. But yeah, that must have been almost 2 years ago now.
Yeah, time moves quickly.
And if I just sort of set some context too, it is the 1st of July. It's 3 p.m. in the afternoon on a Monday. So like what allows you to have a Monday off?
Fuck you. I'm a teacher and got quite a bit of time on my hands, particularly over these holidays.
Yeah, good. So you've actually been at work today as well. So aren't you in like some kind of management role there at the moment as a teacher or someone in education?
I'm still a teacher, but an aspiring leader. I'm involved in a program within Education Queensland with the intention to become a deputy principal, but still in the classroom and still enjoying my time there.
Awesome, mate. Next week's a big event for you. Excuse me, Gold Coast Marathon is right around the corner. You know, we're what, 6 days away from it. The marathon is your main event. How's training been going? You've had some ripper runs lately, the Launceston 10K. What was that, 2 or 3 weeks ago? 3 weeks almost, where you run a high 30 minutes, 30, 50, that is, not a high like 38-minute 10K, but 30, 50-something, wasn't it?
30, 56.
There it
is. So that was 3 weeks ago, but the build-up's been good. I will say it's been different. Traditionally, when training for a marathon, I've tend to do specific marathon workouts. This time leading in, My coach Mike and I, we've taken on a 10K half marathon approach. Our thinking around that is previously I've been getting sick quite a lot.
Yeah.
So we've lowered the intensity and the volume and taken a different approach.
Yeah, so if I just stay on the Launceston run for a little bit here, how was your experience there? Obviously, I heard the temperatures were fantastic. It's a notorious fast 10K. The depth there is unbelievable. You and I unfortunately spoke about the situation of is it called the Lakeside 10K? Another 10K further north in Australia from down, I think it's in Victoria, is it not? On the same day where we've got these two huge 10K events in the country. But either way, both of them, if you pick one of them and you're a fast runner and you're in form, you're going to run faster.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, conditions are great in Launceston. Compared to previous years, there was more wind, but in saying that, it was 1 degree. I had perfect race for myself. I'd prepared myself mentally for war and envisioned that it would be a tough race from the start. But in fact, I got to 7K and it felt pretty easy.
Yeah, now you, like even almost 10 years ago, 8 years ago, you were a 31-something guy.
Yeah.
So you've been fast for a long time. And when I think of myself and many runners out there, 10 years ago, I was running 5 minutes slower in a 5K. And in a 10K, I can't even tell you how much slower I was, maybe 8 minutes in a 10K. So, you know, when you start so quickly at that younger age, it can be quite difficult to progress. And you and I were talking about the other week, you know, things that we could talk about on here to get you back here for more of a clear purpose this afternoon. And you spoke about like trying to better yourself as you get older, which will definitely be a talking point. But other things too, like cross training, you and I were talking off air only 10 minutes ago about cross training and the benefits of things like you've been swimming, you've been on the elliptical, bit of strength work, you're playing tennis today, for
yeah.
example. You know, these little things that are different to running or can contribute to that. And lastly was the mental health side of things too, particularly when you're injured and sick. And I, like a lot of listeners, almost every runner out there who's been doing it for a number of years, at least for as long as you and I, surely must have faced some kind of setback physically, but also that mental impact. So yeah, how does the light sound?
Yeah, sounds great.
Awesome. Hey, let's do a bit of a recap. So yeah, you're on here as I've thought about in the last 2 years sometime there, and you spoke about you as a person. You've just alluded to your work. You're working in Education Queensland. But yeah, just tell us again about yourself a little bit to set the scene so that the listeners can understand who you are before you as a runner comes up in the conversation.
Yeah, sure. So born and raised on the north side, and in 2000, we actually moved to Nudgee, a few streets away from where we are now. So I attended Nudgee State School in primary school. And at that age, I played rugby league at quite a high level in under 12s. I made the Met North team, which is, I guess, a regional team that plays in the Queensland trials. I didn't make the Queensland team, but I carried on playing rugby league until I was age 14 at Norths. And at that age, kids start to catch up growing. I will say that I matured quite early, quite quickly. And at 14, that's when it's make or break. And at that time, I did make what was called the Northern Storm Emerging Squad. And that time, different clubs fed different, I guess, rugby league clubs fed into smaller clubs around Australia and supported them. So Melbourne Storm had an affiliation with Norths, and I was picked with 15 other players to make this team with a proviso that, yeah, I would play for the Melbourne Storm. And that's quite early. But once I was in that competition, I quickly learnt that rugby league wasn't for me anymore.
Yeah, so can I clarify, it's Norths Devils.
Yeah, Norths Devils, yeah.
So I've got a few mates that used to play for Norths Devils in our mid-30s. Now it's pretty rare probably to have a mate of a similar age playing still in rugby league, but
yeah,
definitely Norths Devils in Nunda there, North Brisbane. So that was about 14-ish. If we compare you physically now, like your weight and size to then, like I know for myself, I grew pretty much to maximum height by grade nine. Certainly my weight's fluctuated, but were you sort of a similar size, bigger, smaller at this point?
So I was exactly the same height, and in fact, probably the same weight I was the man child, you know, shaving when I was 11 years old, getting that lesson from my classroom teacher. So physically, I was older than most of the boys that I was playing with.
Yeah, right. So yeah, this league started to phase out and the running come in. So what did running look like again in those later years, like year 11 and 12 then?
So as I transitioned out of rugby league, I found that I had a bit of an engine, and I jumped on the track at school and realized that I could run quite a good 800. And at 15, I ran 216 800, which in today's comparisons doesn't fare very well, but at the time it was quite good. And then I had some other friends who ran and then slowly went up in distance. And by grade 12, I ran 3K 918, and I caught the running bug.
Yeah, and so I know firsthand, as you know, Drew, being a teacher and coach in the GPS system in Brisbane, that those times are pretty good. But you know, it seems like you've really improved over time, but quite quickly too. Like I just alluded to earlier, that it was almost 10 years ago you were running a 31-something minute 10K, and that was in your almost early 20s, and you finished school back then at about 17. So there must have been some real specific training that had come in then, post school.
I'll just go back to, I guess, in primary school training for rugby league. After we'd finished the session, I did run home, and people who live in Brisbane would know that at the bottom of Banya Rugby League Club, there's quite a big hill. I used to run up that coming home, so I did have some kilometers in the legs. And then at high school, I still ran 6 days a week. So quite a high training load. I would say about 70 to 80 kilometers in high school.
Okay. Yeah. So then, in terms of specificity, like any kind of coach or influence that got you to learn about running in those earlier days out of school, how did that look?
So around 2000, 2006, there was one main coach on the north side, Brian Chapman, who had quite a big squad who trained out of Nudgee and Kedron State High School. He had quite a large group, and his sessions were, I guess, the same each week. 8x3, 1 minute, 2 minute, 1 minute, 2 minute times two. And it rotated on a different roster, but it primarily followed a similar model.
Okay,
And
so yeah, you go, sorry.
he would train Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday.
Okay, and were you competing predominantly in 5 10K more so at that earlier age between, say, 18 to 21, 22?
So from 18, I found myself traveling to UQ. I'd sort of outgrown Brian. His squad was mainly high schools. And my main event then was, the 5K, 10K moved up quite quickly.
Yeah, okay. So like we've spoken about you as more of a sprinter, like that top end speed. You've always said you struggled a bit. You know, we put you in a 200 or 400 meter that you'd be pretty quick, but nothing outrageous. Certainly towards some of the guys that you run with. So did you have to sort of work on both the upper end and lower end? And what I mean by that is like speed, but also that real aerobic base too in those years?
I found that when I added more Ks to my training, it sort of dialed back the speed. Whereas when I was a junior, everything was short, sharp, aside from the run home from the football club. But yeah, that was a balance.
Yeah, so give us an idea if this is almost 15 years ago, like what did an actual session or long run look like? Were they doing long runs with efforts back then? Were they hilly long runs? Were the sessions still similar in the sense of like 1K reps or like shorter reps and fartleks and pyramids and all these new things that are coming in now?
Definitely shorter, faster reps. There was no sessions that involved any form of threshold training. It was all a 1K and under. Another session was 10 by four with a 3 minute rest, which is unheard of most training groups today.
Yeah.
Long run did exist. We would go out to Bunya and run hills, and having access to a watch now, I know there can be 1,000 meters of elevation in Banya over 2 hours. So we were doing that at 18. So I still was training hard then.
Okay. Yeah. So just tell us about them. Where was that sort of breakthrough run for you where I think you were talking to me the other day about it on a run, Drew. You mentioned something about some cutoff for some team at around 31 minutes for a 10K. Was there a run that between that sort of 22 to 25 phase of your life, which stood out as a run that was like, you know, I maybe had to give it a good crack?
Yeah, so in 2014, to qualify for the Olympic trials, it was breaking 31 and I'd run 31.30. So in my mind, I was 30 seconds off, which wasn't far. And if you consider my progression from then, it was quite quick. So I thought it'd be smooth sailing to get there. And that was the overarching goal that I had to achieve.
Yeah, so we'll get to you talking about getting better as you do age. And when I talk about age, not necessarily always, you know, you're 60 or 70 years of age, but as you from 25 to 30, 30 to 40, and so on, we've seen many a runner in their late 30s and 40s bloom and hit their absolute peak. But before we get there, let's just recap those PBs too for the listeners across all those events. If you want to go as low as the 800.
Oh, probably not.
But at least 5:10, half and Mara.
Sure. So my 5K PB is 15:05, 10Ks 30:56. My half marathon is 108:40 and marathon is 2:30:58.
Awesome. So my guess is that the half and full are at Gold Coast, but it could be wrong because most of the locals are. Is that right?
So half is actually at Noosa.
Noosa. Mm. Isn't that that's interesting too, because it's a lot of turning in that course, a lot of people on the course, probably less so back when you did it, but certainly turning, and the temperatures can be a little bit more mild as well. Just tell us a bit about that half. We've spoken about the 10 though, but the half?
Certainly battling the crowds. And I found that you're constantly dodging and weaving. So I'd like to think I've got quite a lot in me, but I'm targeting the marathon as I see that as my main event.
Yeah. And then the 5K, there's not many 5Ks around. Where was that at?
So that was in Brisbane, actually.
The Brisbane Marathon Festival 5K.
No, it was on the track. It was one of the track runs. So. Yeah.
You probably told me that 2 years ago, but I've forgotten after about 60 or so episodes now. But yeah, 5K, what, Queensland Champs race, or what was it? Just a random
one of the shield meets. Yeah, one of the random shield meets. But I did about four races to try and chase that and ran 15:06 in Sydney. But
so close to the barrier of 15 minutes.
Yeah.
How'd you fare in that race? Who was in it? Any names come to mind?
Jackson Patterson Smith. I sat on him. Shout out to Jackson. I know he's been on here. He gave me a toe for most of the way and I couldn't hold on. So.
Can I correct you? Patterson Wright?
Oh.
Yeah. It's three names there to
Sorry,
get
Jackson.
Right.
So
you got two-thirds of his name, right?
Yeah.
And he is new, but he was in that. Any others come to mind?
No.
No. Don't want to make an error again on someone's name. So yeah, 5:10 and the half, the full then. How did that look for your PB race for the full marathon?
Yeah, so it was my first marathon. And I basically ran to my watch with the idea in mind to hold between 3:30 and 3:35. And I stuck to that and was able to hold on.
So good.
Yeah.
That's so good. Let's backtrack then. So that time where you've spoken to me about injuries and for you, certainly a significant one it was about early or mid 20s where you had 2 or 3 years off entirely from running. That's a massive time. For anyone who's injured for even a few days a week, it can be an absolute mental battle. But yeah, what was the injury and what did you do to, one, remain fit, but two, to remain sane as well?
Yeah, it was tough. So as I spoke about before, so in 2014, I ran 31:30 with the intention to break 31. And so at that time, I took on more responsibility at work. I guess I started to go out more. And I guess I got a bit greedy in a way and soon found myself with an Achilles injury that I didn't manage correctly. And so that Achilles injury turned into bursitis. And so I had to have an operation to get the bone spur shaved. And then within that operation, I had an infection, which delayed the recovery, and then scar tissue within that. And so, yeah, in total, 3 years without taking a step.
Wow. So what actually caused the injury? Was it overuse or one sort of moment in a run?
It's hard to pinpoint what caused it. I know that having tight shoes with a hard heel cup exacerbated symptoms, but certainly overuse, lack of strength training, and weak calf muscles.
Yes, and how did you know that you were injured? Like, a lot of runners out there struggle to wonder if a niggle's something they could back off with or continue running through to remain fit. But how did you know, or how long did it take as well for you to go, you know, this is probably something I need to get looked at?
So I knew when I would get out of bed, and my first step, it felt like someone had stabbed the back of my foot, and I would just take an hour to warm up and get into the run. And I soon realized that that wasn't normal. And then eventually saw a physio, and to find out, yeah, I had, yeah, Achilles tendonitis and then a bursa.
Okay. So initially, first few weeks, months, you're told to be completely off it?
So I was told to do isometric holds, 8x45 seconds, and then slowly increase the weight, where then you move on to calf raises. And so I followed that traditional model for 3 months without any success. And that time I slowly introduced jogging and still had significant pain. The physio then directed me on to a surgeon, and he was quick to point out that, yeah, surgery was the best option. And he did warn me that there were complications that could happen and people respond differently to surgery. And in my mind, I was happy to roll the dice. But as it turned out, there are complications. And yeah, part of me coming on is to speak about that and make people aware that if you do get surgery, there are risks in terms of scarring and having an infection.
Yeah. So before we get to anything physical, then with the mental side, it must have hit pretty hard when you were so close. You spoke about that 30-second range to make that Olympic team at the time.
Olympic trial.
Trial, sorry, yes. An Olympic team. It'd be quicker than 31. Yep. Thanks for the clarification. Mm. To go from there then to be injured to the point that you can't run at all, how did that sit with you, and what did you initially do to overcome that mental battle of the fact that you couldn't get out the door that day or tomorrow and moving forward?
Yeah, it was hard. So at the time I was 24, and without knowing the age of the listenership, at 24, you know, I didn't realize how important running was to me and what it meant until it was taken away. And I found myself, taking on more responsibility at work and just trying to be busy for busy's sake. And I found it hard with trying to find something to replace running at that time, especially when I was given some hope that I could come back. I would have days where, you know, I could run for like a minute without any pain and the next day be sore, and you'd talk to people and you get glimmers of hope. But mentally, I realize now in hindsight that I needed something physical to do to replace that. And that was hard. It's for me, it wasn't as simple as, you know, replacing that with cycling or swimming. I did those things, but it certainly wasn't the same. I didn't get the same feel, or it didn't scratch the competitive bug in me. And I found that a chore. And so those years I was, certainly struggling mentally.
Yeah. So let's talk about those disciplines of swimming and riding
then. Yeah.
How do you find them different? Because I personally love both of them, but they offer different things. But where for you is, like, why did running stand out in those three disciplines, which make up a triathlon too, which is a popular thing out there too, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, running to me is easy to do. It's accessible. Whereas triathlon and swimming involve quite a lot more gear and traveling time. Whereas running, you can wake up, you can step outside the door and go. And triathlon and cycling, I guess it suits more of a detailed person. Whereas myself, like, I'm not a man of detail. I'm big picture. I think about, you know, long term. I don't focus on the small details.
Yeah, so
simplicity of running is what I enjoyed,
and yeah, swimming too. Swimming, you can't talk underwater, can you?
Yeah,
the people next to you, so a little bit less social, isn't it?
Hmm.
Now, if we use that as a platform to talk about cross training, then because I know you have swum a bit, but the elliptical started to come in at some point. Was that at that point, or did it come in later in your life? And what were you doing cross training wise in addition to any swimming?
So at that time, I'd been cycling and was enjoying that. And then through the direction of my physio, was able to get to elliptical, and I found that mimicked a similar running move. So that's where I discovered it. Took about five gyms to find an elliptical that would actually challenge me and be a workout. But I soon realized that I could get some gains from the elliptical with the hope of getting back to running. Like, I always had the intention to get back and the hope. But yeah, I discovered the elliptical was great.
Okay, talk to us about elliptical. I've never been on one. How does it work? How is it relevant to running too, both from a movement and also aerobic point of view as well?
So it's a stationary, I guess, metal item that swings using, I guess, you can use your arms in it. But it uses hamstrings, glutes predominantly as opposed to calves. So it takes the load off that. And with a different gearing, you can make it higher intensity, or you can, I guess, move more quickly for cadence.
Yeah, okay. So is it something you definitely recommend people to use, elliptical, whether they're injured or not? Is there benefits you can get out of it, even for, say, an easy day or a double day, you get on the elliptical instead of getting out for a run?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's best to do it after a run when you're quite warm, and then put it to quite a hard setting. Like with my cross training, I like to do it quite hard to get something out of it. So I'll put it in the high gear. It's the brand's Maxxis. So I go on like a 12 to 15 gear and really grind that out. I do it to complement a run. You could use it for a double run, but the doubles that I do, I like to actually do it as a slow jog. So yeah, it's quite intentional and hard.
Okay, so within that time, in injury part of the running, is there anything I've missed there with cross training wise, or even from that mental health point of view with what you were going through, or anything that you did intentionally to manage that time before you came back?
Yeah, so I'll speak to both the physical side and the mental health side. In terms of the physical side, my Monday to Friday basically looked like I swim three times a week, I ride twice a week. And I found a social group of guys, Charlie Cools, shout out to Andrew Davies. And then weekends, usually go out Friday or Saturday night, sometimes both. So that did look different. But yeah, in saying that, I did discover swimming. I guess I joined a squad and I did 100s on a 140 cycle. So that was something good to come out of it, but certainly didn't enjoy it. Didn't wake up loving going swimming. And yeah, it became a chore and a grind. And yeah, I still do it, but just once a week.
Yeah. So what has that led to now with how you utilize cross training away from injury to keep fit within your week? Is it much different to how you're doing it back then? Obviously you were spending probably more time doing it, but in a normal week now, what does that look like?
Yeah, I guess so. When I was training, when I was injured from running, there was no, I guess, purpose behind the training. It was hard, but I didn't have a structure or do sets all the time. Whereas now, yeah, I plan it around my running in terms of recovery. But it still has some impact. It's low impact, but has a place.
Okay. So in terms of frequency in a week, if we look at elliptical time, strength time, swimming, or anything else like riding, how many of those would you do a week?
So Mondays, I start the week with a 4 to 5K swim, as well as a gym. Wednesdays after my hour run, I will do an elliptical, which will take it to 90 minutes in total. And then Fridays, an elliptical as well. And then a gym after that. So I like to do gym after I've done an easy run or elliptical.
Yeah, okay. So have you had time like recently where you haven't done that stuff for any reason and sort of made you think about the impact it's having on you? Whenever I do these little things like strength training and stuff, I notice the immediate impact in how just my body feels day to day, but even in a run, I feel sort of might be stronger through my hips or that core from doing core work and things like that. Have you noticed it have a significant impact? Or the opposite when you're not doing it.
There's a school of thought out there that cross training can take away from your actual running and sessions, but I find that I've built up quite a large tolerance to it where I'm not too affected by it. Early on, I was certainly tired from swimming, and particularly gym, certain areas would get spots, certain areas would be sore. But I find that when I do gym, I'm activated for the following day, which is usually a session.
Yeah, because a lot of runners are probably worried to get out there cross training, or when I say out there, maybe that's actually in your house doing other stuff than running that it might impact you the next day or in general. But doing this worth sort of getting through that initial fatigue and not, especially on the easy runs like the day before, if you've done a strength workout, well, who cares how you perform in an easy run? So just timing of it through the week as well and getting through that to find the adaptations then to set in.
Yeah, exactly. With gym, it's only recruiting more muscle fibers. So even if you are sore going into it, you're still going to get the same stimulus out of that session.
Yeah, and if we look at it for marathon running too, do you think it's important for the event alone, the marathon running strength, as much as it would be for, say, 5K or shorter?
I guess it depends on who you are. Like, I'm someone who has had a history of injury, so it's a non-negotiable. There are runners out there who obviously don't need it and might not respond to it, but for me, I am a responder to it.
Okay, so if we sort of step to the side a bit with that and just talk about, improving and maintaining even at the very least your ability and fitness and all this running ability over time. I just want to start specifically somewhere here. Maybe it's mileage first, Drew. We start with mileage about like increasing it over time, say the span of what you've gone through, like 10 years, because I reckon mine's increased a lot over that time, a lot more than yours. You're probably running a lot more than I was when I was 25, for example. But how much should someone look at increasing the mileage and sort of everyone wants a quick fix? I want to run a marathon this year and do a training block and run this time. Yet they don't see that bigger picture. So you may not have seen it back then, but looking back now and moving forward in terms of mileage, how do you see that?
I guess there's two variables you can play with, and that's the mileage and intensity. And for me, I've tried quite a few different systems of training. Like in 2014, when I did get injured, I got quite greedy and was doing more training that my coach had intended I do. So in those days, I did get up to 150K a week. Whereas now, since coming back in 2019, 2020, I've slowly progressed. It's been about 20 kilometers a year. So I guess for me, what's made me improve is actually doing little things. So after I do a session, I'll tend to do strides now after the warm down. Like
This is an
a
actual session.
yeah, yeah. So after a
Okay.
session, you warm down and I'll do strides after that. So instead of doing strides when you're fresh, again, back to what I was saying about recruiting different mu muscle fibers and having a different stimulus, that sort of gets mimics and is close to that feeling in a marathon. So that's something that I've done. I've also trialed doing gym between some threshold runs as well. So I'll do a threshold and then I'll jump into some squats and deadlifts.
Yeah, it seems like you're not afraid to put the effort in
No.
through the weeks where the actual like the session may not be where it could be, speed wise and ability wise when you whack it on Strava, but that those little things can add up over time around it. As I said, which people can be, runners can be afraid of doing. So were you, when did you sort of hit 100K, for example? Because 100K seems to be an arbitrary number for people that strive towards the marathon. Not all, we have probably many a marathon runner might run 50K, but 100K is definitely a really good point to be at and plus. When did you hit 100 and where have you sort of, what's been your biggest week, for example, in the last sort of 5 years?
So the past 5 years, my biggest week's been 135K. But when I started, I was at 65, 70K a week. So it's taken that time to get here. And I'm quite confident that I could run that 160K, particularly coming off doing all the gym work that I've done. But I don't want to risk that.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So if you, let's say you're coaching someone right now and they were wanting to increase their mileage, would there ever be a number in your head like 100K to try and get to, or even a minimum? Or do you think, and this is still in line with that notion of running as you're aging, like is there just a thing here now to consider what works for them?
Yeah, I think there's a few parts to that. And again, it depends who you are, your training age, so to speak. I find that if you're not improving, you have to really think about what areas haven't you explored. And back to my point about doing strides after a session, like I'm a big follower of Steve Magnus. He has a podcast called On Coaching, and he's a sports scientist and physiologist. So he's got, you know, the science background to explain this. And I think people really need to broaden their horizons and think outside of the traditional 100K a week model. Certainly can be a good number for people and how you break that up. But if you're looking at the marathon, then you might break that up into like a 30K week, sorry, a 30K run, and then two other big sessions. And yeah, only run 3 or 4 days a week. But yes, you really have to monitor like what's working and what's not. And that's the hard part. It's a challenge.
Yeah, so if we do the maths on that, as a maths teacher myself, 30K obviously in the long run. The two other longer ones, let's say they're having throwing a number out here, it's say 15K,
yeah,
two of them, for the total that is across the warm-up and cool-down as well. That's now 60K, and that's three runs. So then, yeah, if you, that's probably the space where you work out what extra do I need to do, and could it be something like the elliptical or strength work, or you're a massive advocate for heels, you know, and we struggle, both of us out here around the Nudgee and Banyo and Northside areas for heels, not so much if you go further west around Wavell Heights and further to Banyo, but what about the heels too in getting better as you're trying and you're plateauing as you're aging?
Yeah, exactly. And that's something else to explore. And you can run heels at a slow pace or fast pace and you'll get something out of each. I'd like them over a long run. I find, that it just gives you that extra strength. And I think that's the most important thing in running is strength.
Yeah, and that's where people get caught up on their pace for their runs. But do you think even just jogging around doesn't need to be running up steep hills or running fast on an easy day, but just jogging over undulations, that's a word, isn't it? Undulations or undulating environments can allow you to have those adaptations that in essence, that's real minor strength work, isn't it? Because strength work is loading the body up. Hills are still loading the body with far less weight, so to speak, but it's different, obviously, to running flat.
Yeah. Like this is, I guess, my experience and it's just anecdotal information. I find that cross training, it doesn't give you the strength in the back end of a race. It might take you to say halfway in a 10K, so it might get you to 5K, but then that back end, you do need that strength, and that if that's the threshold or the strength training. So I'm not saying that cross training is the be all and end all, but it has a place.
Yeah, so let's keep exploring here for those, and I'm in this boat too, as I have had a massive purple patch last year. Maybe there's listeners out there who had the same thing, and What I mean by purple patch is I wasn't winning fun runs. I'll never win a fun run, but yeah. I PB'd almost all my events. But now, this year, especially with a baby around and a few little injuries, mm-hmm. I'm plateauing and struggling and looking for exploring these options as to where I can improve. So we've spoken about like possibly the hills mm-hmm. in there and looking at specificity in the week, mm-hmm. you know, a session, maybe some more conversation around the threshold run is, mm-hmm. is an option to talk about. The long run, and maybe efforts within that, cross training. What have we missed, or do you think we need to talk further to?
I think if you are going to start swimming, instead of just, I guess, say swimming a K or two easy, actually joining a squad. If you can't swim, learning to swim, and starting to do sessions within that. And what I mean by that is like say 10 by 100 meters. At I guess a high heart rate, and that's where the real gains come from. That or doing hypoxic work. And I know a lot of runners don't enjoy swimming, so that is a challenge, and it might be hard for you to get to a pool. But I see real benefit in hard swimming sessions.
Yeah, I see a lot of runners who swim just get in the water and mm-hmm. swim, and for yeah. whatever reason, swimming has this idea that. That's all it is for some people.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you've got a swimming background or do triathlon in any way or ocean swimming, you've mm-hmm. probably got more structure about it. I just don't know why people just jump in a pool and swim with no structure. Because I completely agree. If you can get so much out of it, particularly in a squad, it can mm-hmm. drag you along as well.
Yeah. If you are new to swimming, you're going to find it very difficult today to say do sessions, but you can certainly build up to it.
Yeah, I agree. But also, like, if you're not so good at swimming, you can still, like, say, do half the 25 meters slow than a 25 meters hard. And maybe it's, you know, it's 10 laps of that.
Yeah.
So there's probably still some relevance there to the, mm-hmm. the weaker swimmers, do you think?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, what else in here, particularly? I've got many running mate who look at the strength work a lot. Paul mm-hmm. Goulet, who was on here as a co-host, is a massive advocate for strength training, probably because he's a personal trainer.
Yeah.
But he's, I think he's just hit 40 mm-hmm. and he does a lot of strength work. So you think there's plenty of runners out there not doing enough strength work?
Look, I don't know plenty of runners, but I can say that it's more important as you get older, but I've certainly found more benefit in it over the years.
Yeah. And heavy lifting, or more so, do you think more higher repetition and plyometric, even the leaping and bounding sort of strength work?
I guess it depends on who you talk to. Physios and exercise physiologists like to get runners up to doing 1.5 times their body weight, and that could be in a squat or in, say, an isometric hold. And if you think about that, that's quite hard. And there is a risk in doing that. You can certainly fatigue or strain a muscle when doing gym. So I take a more conservative approach. And I don't overload the gym, particularly if I'm running quite a high volume or there is intensity in there. So typically I'll do about 80% of my max within gym.
Okay. Are you doing any plyometric training with that? I assume you've heard of that word or used it somewhere where you're doing the sort of box jumps and one leg hops and things like that, where you're getting that real explosiveness, which you lose as an older person too.
I only do that in my warm-ups. Like I'll do side skips. There's no box jumps, particularly with my issues with my Achilles. I tend to find that flares it up.
Yeah.
But there certainly is a place for that.
Yeah. Cause I do wonder that's something that runners are losing as they're aging, is that real explosiveness.
Yeah.
And like you said, the strides mm-hmm. They are plyometrics to a degree, but in terms of like that real sharp, fast movements that we just take for granted as we get older and stop doing. Yeah. So like, yeah, strides at the end of a workout or the plyometric stuff, you think is something that runners can benefit from too?
I think gym and plyometrics just helps ground contact time. And that's what I guess the best runners have. If you look at them across distances from 400 to the marathon, that's what separates the runners is ground contact time.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's because really speed is your stride length multiplied by your cadence, but then we can almost add in there that how long is your foot on the ground?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's only probably evident in a 100-meter sprint, for example.
Yeah.
Usain Bolt used to have a huge long stride and hit the deck and get off it pretty quickly. Not that we're talking about sprinting here, but it's probably something to take out of that too.
Yeah, sprinting certainly has a place in long distance running. It's something I'd explore if I had my time again. But yeah, certainly a place for gym and cross training.
Yeah, on that note of the reps, the really fast reps too. How short do you think you should go as a marathoner? For example, marathoners run 42 kilometers, just over, and anywhere between, let's say, 2 to 5, 6 hours. How important is it? Because I reckon these elite marathoners are running sub 50 seconds for 400, for example. They'd be pretty fast still, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
So, yeah, how short have you gone in? Have you done like sort of 200-meter work or even the hundreds in addition to strides? Because strides are usually about 50 to 100 meters themselves. But what about sort of the 200, 300, 400 sessions?
I do 400s, but the 400s that I do are around 5 to 10K pace. I don't tend to do sessions that are around that 1500 meter pace just because of my age and my training age. I'm sure there is benefit to that, but in my circumstance, the risk reward, it isn't there. I do some 10K training, but then as we get closer to the marathon, it's very specific.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And obviously keeping out of injury and away from injury is important. Probably the number one reason for that is because if you're consistent over a long time and you're not injured, what's going to allow for that, isn't it? By not being off the road and actually running. So what things do you think can keep people away from injury? And I'm asking a man that's been injured for 3 years, but like, do you stretch much? Do you look at what you eat for making sure you're fueling right? I've heard of injuries happening from underfueling, for example. Where does that sit with you, do you think, like keeping away from injury? More so the muscular, the overuse injuries or stress fractures, for example.
Yeah, look, I'm not one to stretch. I've looked at the research and there's a small to no effect size on stretching. I know some people might say they feel better, but I don't stretch and I do get some massage, but that's, yeah, my personal preference. In terms of things outside of that, I think nutrition's a big one. I haven't taken that seriously. Well, I have taken it seriously in the past couple of years. I track my food on MyFitnessPal because I have been getting sick and found out that I was underfueling significantly. So that's something I would recommend, is making sure you are getting enough calories throughout the day.
The stretching is an interesting one. I've definitely thought about it myself, and I don't stretch a lot either. I used to a lot in school. Static stretching, you know, 20 years ago was massive. And also before you competed, I'm talking about swimming and running here predominantly, but also after, and almost always the hamstrings. I haven't read much research about static stretching, but I don't do a lot of it. I also know a lot of runners that don't do a lot of it. I'm not going to sit here saying don't do it.
Yeah.
I just do wonder, is there something more so in just running? If you want to be good at running, just run predominantly. Is that your thinking?
Yeah, that's my thinking around the event. Most of the running events, I would say, particularly the marathon, is volume is the most important thing, sprinkled in with intensity. You don't have to overthink it. And back to your point about things outside of running, like I know myself and for other runners, some people like to run on soft surfaces, whether that be grass or trails. But again, the research doesn't support that, doesn't say that that has any benefit. The other thing that I do and I think is beneficial is doing my sessions or running in the morning, particularly fasted. I find that you need to be fat adapted to get a response out of the training, particularly over the longer distances. And then when you do take on that fuel for those sessions, there is a real benefit, because if you're fueling for shorter sessions, then you're not adapted to carbohydrate as a fuel source.
Yeah, it's a funny one that you mentioned that. And we'll stay with it, because there's probably a lot of people that aren't doing that anymore, like fasting a lot. It's from what I've read and heard about nutrition is that you should practice it in training, like you would for racing. Mm-hmm. Don't do the fasting, like, especially like you're gonna eat and consume calories and nutrition after you run. So people like you, why not start that process when you're running, mm-hmm. in the long run itself, for example. So when you're stopping, you don't have to go and binge eat on certain foods, but you've got a head start, so to speak.
Yeah.
Is there a time and place maybe for both?
Certainly. And I'm sure a lot of people have found that if they don't eat, then they will binge eat, say later in the day or at that night. So there is a place for fueling in sessions.
Okay, well, let's go to the marathon then. Unless I've missed something that you wanted to talk about here this afternoon, Drew, in terms of we've covered cross training, mm-hmm. Bettering yourself as you age, and that mental health stuff around injuries. Is there anything that I've missed before? Or I would love to talk about your marathon coming up at Gold Coast. I'll get this out this week and get some advice from you to the runners out there. Anything I've missed?
I guess back to the mental health stuff, and as runners, we enjoy that feeling of running, and when that's taken away from you, that's the hard part to deal with. And like I was saying, at 24, I didn't realize how important it was, and finding something to replace that, I've probably only found that now. An interest as important as running, and that was really hard, and I didn't want to be around running, and you know, I don't have an answer to how to get out of that space. But I think as coaches and training partners, to reach out to those people is really important in the squad. You tend to forget when people aren't running, to message or talk to them. But it's certainly hard to navigate that injury space.
Yeah, what about like having, you talk about something to replace it with?
Yeah.
Is it important, you think, to think about what you're doing at the time? So if it were to be stripped away, mm-hmm. and you and I probably know many a, we've spoken about certain runners in the last week who are, we know, are just so obsessed and into running, which is great.
Yeah.
But what, let's say tomorrow that's been taken away from them, and fingers crossed it isn't. Is it, do you think there's an idea to actually think about what else is my identity? What else do I have to fill the hours of the week other than work and running and anything family or social wise?
Yeah, certainly. Like, I'm someone who didn't put all my eggs in one basket with running. I had outside interests, but I had that competitive nature and couldn't find anything to fill that. But I think over the span of, say, when you start running, yeah, you need to have outside interests and not be all in. And I guess have that self-awareness within yourself of what do you actually enjoy. And I've certainly enjoyed partying, but definitely threw myself into it too much. And upon reflection, yeah, you realize those things.
Yeah, because like, you know, you can watch TV, for example, some Netflix and things. But I do wonder, is it plausible for people right now who listen to this to just to think for a second, what else is there in my life that if this was to be taken away? Because honestly, it could happen to anyone. You've got to be grateful, I think, just to be on your feet on the road running at all. And you and I both know people that have that, and we've just spoken about you, but taken away and how you cope with that.
Yeah. So how are you when you're not running? You know, like, and for me, I just found that running made me so consistent in life. And that was the biggest challenge, is that when it's taken away, like, you just show up differently. But yeah, you manage to navigate that.
Awesome. Well, Gold Coast this weekend. Let's get to that. I keep looking at the screen thinking this will cut out at 40 minutes. It usually does for a trial on Zoom, cut out at 40 minutes, but it's gone past that. I think we're at about 50 to an hour here. So we'll carry through. You see that sound off, Drew, let me know. But Gold Coast in 6 days. That's Sunday is the marathon. I'll be out there running a 10K, less than a quarter of you. But what does your week look now taper wise leading in? Like, what do you do today and what do you do to prepare physically? And I mean that by being as well prepared, not overcooked when you hit the start line Sunday.
Mm-hmm. So this is my fourth build up to a marathon. I've only finished one and been sick for the previous one. So I like to think I have quite a good base and build up. So my marathon taper basically started today, and that just involved a 5K swim, and I did play tennis.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But prior to that, marathon taper started 10 days before that. So tomorrow's session will be 1x3K and 5x1 minute at 10K pace. So I'll reduce the intensity and volume and look to run about 60 kilometers.
This week. Okay. Yeah. So then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, that's 4 days, isn't mm-hmm. it? You're just jogging. Is that, do you add strides to almost all of those at the end? One of them is strides, the thing that you do, especially at marathon pace or anything?
Not if I'm tapering. So yeah. If I'm tapering, I'll just do that session and then easy jogging.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And the day before, a lot of runners don't run or need to consider what they do before the day before the actual race. What does your day before look like?
So I like to just run for 15 minutes, 3K.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's another good thing is time. Mm-hmm. And you've always been a big advocate for time.
Yeah. Like
not stressing on Ks, mm-hmm. for example. Time's a different way you can look at it and reducing that prior. All right, let's talk about the race. What time are you hoping for? How are you going to run it? When you talk, you can probably talk to yourself, but tips out there too for runners pace wise or on the course as well.
So this time around, I'm aiming to head out at 1:14, 1:15 and see how I'm feeling and then bring it home from 30K, looking to run 3:15s from that 30K. Whereas previously, I would have aimed to run it more evenly, but coming from the 10K half marathon training block, I'm not so sure of myself. It'll be an interesting test.
So you are definitely aiming for a PB?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to run 2:26, 2:27.
Yeah. So that is around 3:15, is it? I thought 3:15 was quicker than that.
No, it'd be much quicker than that. But if I'm going out at 1:15 for a half marathon and then coming back at 3:15, I land somewhere between 2:26, 2:27. Yeah. So, that's the plan. And then I've got Melbourne later on in the year where I'll run that more evenly and hopefully run quicker.
Awesome. Well, yeah, appreciate your time. The first one of the Local Legends in Running podcast in person. May have to do it again. I've set up the podcast studio pretty well. We just need the proper cameras and lighting and maybe a microphone each or for guests. And
yeah, that's a nudgy. Yeah.
The nudgy. It might be a bit of a drive for some people out here though, the nudgy. And maybe I can bring a few Northsiders in here. But yeah, it's worked pretty well and appreciate your time. So thank you.
No worries.
Awesome, mate. Well, let's let's hit pause and hope that's saved.
Done.
Yeah, good. Mate, you're good. It's great.
Have you had that happen before where it hasn't saved?
If you enjoyed listening to this episode or the Local Legends in Running podcast in general, please jump on Spotify, give it a rating. I'd much appreciate it. Thank you.